Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Divi Nation. Divi Nation is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a proud leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. The goal of Divi Nation is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and as your host, it's my job to facilitate that success by having various guests from the Divi and wider WordPress community onto the show to share their stories and experiences with you. In this episode, I'll be sitting down with David Bissett. David's a WordPress developer who hails from the early days of WordPress. We're talking version 1.5 here. David's an avid WordPress community member, a contributor to both WordPress Core and BuddyPress. He's also a founding organizer of the Miami WordCamp. When we caught up on Skype, David shared his WordPress story from a perspective that we haven't actually had on the show before, that of a WordPress developer. So what we talked about was what makes a good developer-designer relationship, and then we closed things up by talking about WordCamps in general, in particular WordCamp Miami, which is happening next weekend. Here's our conversation.
David, welcome to Divi Nation.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How's your morning going? What's up with you down in Florida?
This is my coffee. That's how my morning is doing.
Oh, no. I got the same.
Have you seen big that? Yeah. You could lose some car keys in here. This is pretty deep. So yeah, just doing fine. Weather in Florida is a little rainy. It's a little cloudy. It can't make up its mind what temperature it is. And that's just the way I like it.
Yeah. Sounds like Ohio, oddly enough, can't decide what season it is. Always raining or snowing or sunny all in the same day. Sometimes it's bonkers.
Oh, well, you know, I'm in Florida, so bonkers is in my driveway. It's outside my house.
I'm always interested just because we talk to a lot of freelancers, a lot of people who are their own boss or set their own pace. What's a typical day for you like? What's your routine as a WordPress freelance developer?
When I wake up, I roll over as many times as it needs for me to drop on the floor. And then after that, it's usually if it's a school day, I have to usually take my kids to school, drop them off, and then I come back and I usually have the rest of the day to myself, more or less. Check emails in the morning, take care of anything WordPress community related, exchange emails, WordCamp organization, you know, plan my day, that sort of thing. And then I try to get into I have a morning block and an afternoon block. So I really try to kind of get up the most critical items of the day in the morning first, obviously.
That's interesting. I like the idea of blocking time. I'm a huge time blocking fan and batch tasker and all that. Is that kind of how you roll? Do your productivity type stuff in the morning and then afternoon get into your more, I guess, deep thinking, longer tasks?
I try to do the deep thinking stuff in the morning because my kids aren't around.
Yeah, that might help. I struggle just with cats, so I can't imagine if I had kids around.
No, I mean, I prefer to do that stuff in the morning. It seems to be the best time. And there seems to be, as the day goes on and it goes into night, there just seems to be, you know, more distractions, if not from family, but from other clients and physically, you know, I get weaker physically and I start to read things on Twitter more than I should be working, and I have to fight them. It's a harder fight near the end of the day. So
yeah,
very trying to get the deep, urgent and deeper, you know, I'm the kind of person who likes to get things off their plate.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's awesome to know about your daily routine. I mean, it's awesome to know about your daily routine. That's something I always, am fascinated by. And you're actually our first web developer on the show, so it's cool to get a little bit of a different perspective. So as our first bona fide WordPress developer guest, I was really looking forward to hearing, you know, a WordPress story from a different perspective than our usual. So if you don't mind, I'd like to start kind of at the beginning by asking you, you know, what got you involved in WordPress and when was that?
Oh, wow.
I know, we're going way back.
I've been doing this for over 10 years. I started using WordPress when version 1.5 just came out. So, you know, I'll be walking with a WordPress cane pretty soon because I'm pretty old school. And there's people that started with it older, older than that. But I started looking around. I was more or less starting out in my freelance business. I built a couple of custom CMS solutions for myself, proprietary, nothing that I released in public. And I believe I used something along the lines of, I don't know if CodeIgniter existed back then, but I remember using CodeIgniter for something, and then CakePHP a little bit after that. Or maybe I built them custom from the ground up, because I can't remember how old these frameworks are. But I just suddenly discovered, boy, it's either I need to find a better system for this, or maybe someone's already reinvented the wheel. Hmm. So like most people that have in my, I think most developers that are of my age probably did start the same way I did, like looked at Drupal, looked at Joomla, found out what the biggest CMSs were. I think I tried PHP Nuke first. Hmm. That was a bomb, no pun intended. And it was, I also tried Joomla. Hmm. I like Joomla from what I can remember of it. Seemed a little, I don't know, just seemed a little weird. But then again, my PHP experience was, I moved from .NET to PHP. Or I should say I moved from ASP to PHP. I think I jumped ship when .NET started taking the scene. Hmm. So I said, nope. I don't know, long story. So I tested Drupal and Joomla, and I decided on I tried WordPress as number three, and it seemed pretty straightforward and simplistic because I didn't really need anything complex. I wasn't building complex applications. I was building probably like, you know, 4 to 6 page, you know, type of business sites or something along mm-hmm. those lines. So I didn't need anything. I needed something that was like, I could grasp pretty quickly because I had some projects at the time I was actually shopping around for. So I was kind of learning, picking this up on my way. And WordPress was, I think, the easier of the ones to pick up. I didn't think it was necessarily the most powerful at the time, but I didn't really need that power. I think Drupal seemed to be a little more powerful, had a little more depth to it back then from what I could see, but I didn't need that. But and then, you know, obviously once I started getting more and more into WordPress, I realized, oh, it's, you can go deep with this as well. So, and that's what I've been doing more or less for the past decade is WordPress stuff. And then from there, obviously, once I got WordPress under the belt and I was doing work with that, then I stumbled into BuddyPress.
Normally I like to ask what was your first client experience like? So you were actually developing before you got involved in WordPress. So this is kind of a two-parter for you. So the first part is, can you tell us about your very first paid development project and some of the lessons that you learned? So that's part one. And part two is, after making the transition from static websites to WordPress, what was the biggest difference for you as a developer working with clients in that area?
I can't remember what my first one was. That was probably over 12 years ago, and I probably would have blocked it out of my mind because I can't imagine it was.
You mean that. You didn't like frame a memory of it somehow? Like your first dollar bill made with web development is not hanging on your wall somewhere?
We're literally going back to like the days of like the first internet bubble, because I used to work before I worked full time for a travel agency and being a project manager, senior web developer there. I was doing like I remember one time I was in like a WordPress website sweatshop.
What is that?
It's basically, I don't know where these leads came in, but basically you were doing 4-page websites for people and you were knocking them out maybe 1 or 2 a day.
Oh my goodness.
And that was my first experience with like major, like with a working for a company exclusively for like anything dealing with web design.
So it's all uphill from there, I guess, right?
Yeah. But as far as my own paid, it was probably something like, I probably barely made 100 or 200 bucks on whatever it is I did for somebody. I probably did a 4-page website for somebody and, you know, barely probably could afford, you know, it was probably pizza money for me.
Yeah,
for the week or something along those lines. It was something that was definitely very unprofessional in terms of like, you know, I don't even think I would have called myself a freelancer at that point. I think I was just hey, I can do this on the side for you, no problem. And back then it was, you know, the odds of you finding someone who could actually do something were actually decent back then, because the people who could admit to doing it. And of course I did several projects of my own first before I would take on pretty much any work. So I probably did my own website at that time. But yeah, very little money, and it was probably, you know, very poor coding compared to what there was today. But yeah, I was in that sweatshop for a while, and then I got out and I moved to an actual real business who worked on airline and vacation websites with Delta and Continental. So I managed to get myself into a good, you know, branding and, you know, best practice. I started learning best practices in there.
The next part of the question is, you know, you made the transition from doing static websites and kind of learning on your own to working within WordPress exclusively at this point, I'm assuming. What was that transition like, and what was the big difference for you? What made the difference for you, I guess, to make you want to do that?
I know I didn't have enough. Well, there's some people that will go out and build their own CMSs.
You were doing that, right?
Yeah, but I don't think I was doing, like, I was customizing it for every client. And I guess you either go down, eventually you find out that if you're going to make any sort of money off of this, you either have to reuse the code that you've, the CMSs that you built, or find one that does it for you. And back then I was like, okay, WordPress seems to be easy enough for not only myself, but for clients to pick up as well. Clients that I can hand things off to clients and have them kind of, or at least it was easy enough changes for them to find another developer necessarily. And the big transition point for me was that it was the ease of use. And it was the fact that I couldn't keep creating either you create a static CMS or you create a CMS that you can share with others, or you start branding or marketing it as your own, or you go find one that's stable. That's the two choices I think I have in my mind, because it doesn't work out financially to build a custom CMS for every client, especially if like another developer takes over, or you don't know what you did two years after you built it. So yeah, WordPress provided the stability, provided also the community that I eventually took advantage of too. So that's why I needed to get out of the custom. And remember, this was, you know, still like over 10 years ago. So custom, there weren't very, the choices nowadays are like easily dozens. There's dozens of more CMSs that exist out there on a smaller scale, you know, that you can, then you can pick in different choices that you had. But back then it was just basically, you know, you had four choices maybe, and of words that you heard of. So I just picked the one that just seemed like it had the most community support and ease of use from our clients at the time.
Excellent. And speaking of your clients, you've found since then, and that was what, almost like 2005-ish, right? That you started using WordPress?
I think probably before that, whenever 1.5 came out.
Oh, okay.
I liked, I know when I was married, and I know it wasn't then, so it was probably 2004 maybe.
Well, regardless of the exact year, since then you've kind of settled into what I think is a pretty fascinating niche. Correct me if I'm wrong, but your primary business is creating custom WordPress themes, usually around BuddyPress on a client by client basis. Is that more or less on
target? It's the majority. I'd say it's like over 50% of my work.
Okay.
I mean, there's not a lot of experienced BuddyPress developers still out there. So a lot of times I do get, like, work does come across my table very often regarding BuddyPress work. But I'm your average developer too. I've had a lot of my work still consists of building, you know, custom themes and plugins for clients.
So what made that direction, whether it's the custom themes and plugins or custom themes and plugins with BuddyPress, what made that the right decision for you as a business person, as opposed to, I don't know, maybe developing a commercial theme or commercial plugins?
I've always, I for some reason, I have I've never gone in the direction of making something myself and then trying to sell that. I think the support aspect of that is what turns me off, because I know whatever it is I'm going to make, I'm going to have to field support questions on. There's a lot of people in the WordPress community that are completely the opposite. They can build something and sell it, and they don't have a problem. They don't have a problem worrying about the support and all of that. For me, I always liked the interaction with clients. I thought that was something from day one for my freelancing. I always liked interacting with clients, different needs, learning about their different kinds of businesses, ideas, you know, building a custom solution in some ways for them, that sort of thing. That's always had an appeal to me.
Oh, fascinating. Would you mind telling us about, you know, just what a typical project looks like for you from, you know, getting a new client to delivering, you know, what you've been hired to deliver? I think it's probably typical. A bit different as a developer than it would be for a, you know, designer, just workflow wise, I'm sure.
Right. So there are similarities possibly. I've worked with other designers on projects too, and some of their procedures are generally similar to mine. So we talk with the client first. Mm-hmm. You know, figure out like what they're trying to accomplish. And sometimes what they're trying to accomplish is not the same thing as what on paper they're trying to ask for
like what they think they need versus what they actually need type thing.
Right. And sometimes you kind of like, I remember having a couple of clients here or there that I basically had to tell them flat out to their face, listen, you're hiring me for my knowledge and expertise. Don't tell me how to do this particular part of the job. If I don't think it's the right thing, then it's not going to be. It's not the right thing for that particular scenario. So you talk with the client one-on-one first and kind of get a general feel of what their goals are, what they're trying to accomplish. And then, you know, obviously you factor time and budget into it, and you come up with a specifications document of some sort, which is just in its simplest form, it could be just a bullet list of things how they want the website to function. Hmm. Like, I want to be able to create a website that allows people to order food from local restaurants. So, okay, well then how do people search for the restaurants? You know, that's a piece of information. How do, you know, do people have accounts? And if so, what's the information that their accounts store? Like their location information, their name, so forth. So you gradually step through the user workflows, and you come up with a bullet list of functionality, or sometimes it's page by page, like, you know, this page has this functionality and so forth. And then at the end, you finalize that specifications document, and that is what you have to work from a development standpoint. So at the end of the project, or close to the end of the project, you and the client could go back to that specifications document and say, okay, let's just make sure all of these are checked off. And, you know, obviously that prevents, like, scope creep.
Yeah.
Among other things. But primarily I primarily do it to make sure that we're on the same page regarding the functionality of things. Because some clients can, like, think about something and then come back later and, you know, oh, I've given this much more thought. And, like, well, I would have thought you'd given it thought before you hired me. But that's, you know, in that respect, I don't think that's any different from what a lot of designers go through.
Oh, yeah, not at all. That sounds like a very similar story. Well, speaking of designers, you know, that is the bulk of our audience. And I think a lot of them would want to know, you know, what teaming up with a talented developer like yourself entails. You know, so what to you makes a good partnership or teammate when it comes to a designer? And how does that relationship work?
Oh, I know a couple of good designers that I like to work with on projects. And I think the most appealing thing for me on them is they can't be pessimistic, because that's my role. So I need someone there to boost me up. Someone who understands the process and knows how to handle a client sometimes. Someone who has patience enough to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And we can work kind of like a good cop, bad cop, or good cop in terms of, like, you know, sometimes working it, because you do some of my projects, we need to involve designers in from the beginning. I don't like being blindly given, you know, specifications based on the design from a designer that I've never spoken with about the project before. Sure. So there is, and there's lots of good talks that I can think of later to mention about how you can be a good designer to a developer and vice versa.
Well, yeah, that was going to be part of my next question is what is, you know, when you said they need to know like the technical side of things or at least have an understanding of it, what exactly does that mean? Like what kind of things do they need to understand in order to be able to give you the, I guess, design specs that play nice with, you know, what's possible from a development side?
Well, a lot of people have this feeling that designers should know how to code. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that's true. Otherwise, developers don't necessarily need to know everything about design in order to talk to designers. But I think there are some basics that could be, there's some basics that could be learned, obviously, but I think there needs to be some sort of communication between the developer and the designer early on in the project. Because if you're designing, for example, like a WordPress site or a BuddyPress site, there's certain things that mm-hmm. you want to keep in mind to make things go more smoothly, you know, for yourself if you are the developer. Mm. Designers, you know, if designers really need that communication level of skill, and if there is something that they're doubting, they need to be to reach out to the developer and ask them, hey, is this something possible? Or, hey, can you like look over these before I send them to the client? That sort of thing. Technical skills. It's nice if a designer knows HTML or front end technologies. I think if they have experience with WordPress, I think the more designers use WordPress, they begin to see, you know, which directions WordPress leans into, you know, regarding like archiving posts and mm-hmm. categories and tags and that sort of thing. Because a lot of the designers aren't just making something look visually appealing. They're designing the user interface, the user experience. So that involves a lot of knowing what WordPress can do to be able to take advantage of that. So they should be, you know, they should be quite familiar with WordPress, in my opinion, in order to, you know, design WordPress sites.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a requirement. I mean, it's not necessarily a requirement, though, because it depends on the budget and the time, because mm-hmm. I've seen people create some totally original things and they don't know a lick of WordPress, and it ended up being a WordPress project anyway.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I told a lot of people, if you have a certain budget, I say to them, listen, tell your designer shouldn't need to worry about WordPress and BuddyPress. Design the theme that design the look and feel that works for them. And then we have the budget to be able to make the modifications in WordPress or, you know, write the necessary mm-hmm. front-end code to be able to do what they want. So I don't like to, you know, smaller projects, I think it's more critical that you kind of take these, you know, go along the worn path, as it were.
Sure, yeah.
But with WordPress, the great thing about WordPress is that it's so customizable if you know what you're doing, and then if you have the time and the budget to make it happen.
I'd like to start, you know, kind of turn the page here and start talking about community involvement and how people can get involved. So I know you have been organizing WordCamp Miami down in Florida from basically the beginning. Is that correct? Beginning of WordCamp Miami, I guess.
Well, it's been going on 8 years. The first WordCamp Miami, I was part of BarCamp Miami, and I wasn't involved in that up until probably the last day or two. I think I spoke there or something along those lines. And so that's where our first WordCamp Miami got started, was from BarCamp Miami. And then I think a year later, we had like John Jacoby was in Florida and Todd Dunbar was in Florida, still is in Florida. We had a few people down there. We just said, let's start our own WordCamp. And WordCamps back then were starting to just hear about them. I think they were going on for about 2 years before our first WordCamp got started. So there weren't a lot of them, but at the same time, there were other people that got into it earlier than Miami did. I definitely started as part of that core group. I think other than Batam, myself, everyone eventually moved out of Florida. So we've had various people over the years join the organization committee. And, you know, for a while it was a couple of years for me. Then we kind of switched off lead organizers, and Bata Dunbar is the lead organizer this year. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been pretty good. It's been a very rewarding experience, tiring sometimes, but I've had the pleasure of people like, it's really great when people come up to you and says they enjoyed a WordCamp or something like that. So, and the knowledge that we have, and I think it strengthened the WordPress community down here as a whole since South Florida.
Well, for those who are not, you know, completely aware in the loop on WordCamps, can you kind of just give us an idea of what a WordCamp entails?
WordCamps are like large meetups. You know, some WordCamps are 100 people, 150 people. Some of them are 700 or 800. WordCamp US was like, what, 1,800. So there are people that give their talks, and everything is volunteer-based, which means the speakers don't get paid, volunteers don't get paid, ticket prices are $35, and there's a number of sponsors usually, many of which are WordPress hosting companies that do help support the events. So
what kind of stuff can someone expect to, I guess, get out of going to a WordCamp?
The knowledge is pretty good, pretty good knowledge for most people. So if you are someone who wants to learn WordPress for the first time, there's usually some beginner classes you can take. It varies. The subjects obviously vary by WordCamp. You know, conferences do change, but generally speaking, the WordCamps are available to anybody regardless of their background or experience. So you could just be a WordPress person just starting out. Maybe you've never touched WordPress before, or maybe you are a seasoned developer, or maybe you are someone that runs a WordPress site for your business, or you are a freelancer that's building WordPress sites, or you're a designer who you've heard of WordPress enough, but you want to, like I said before, you want to design better sites, especially if you know WordPress is in there. So you want to kind of, you know, get some experience. And a lot, you know, the more WordCamps have come out, the wider subjects have been covered. So like with WordCamp Miami, for example, you know, half of the talks maybe aren't even directly related to WordPress. They're more web related, you know, like CSS or HTML or best design practices, you know, that sort of thing.
I think that's really interesting with, you know, particularly watching Matt Mullenweg's State of the Word for 2015. It's been kind of the case for a while now, but with us, you know, officially hitting 25% of the web as WordPress does, as the WordPress community, a lot of people are really starting to say things like, when WordPress does it, the rest of the web does it. And so it's kind of cool that, you know, WordCamps not only give you specific information about WordPress itself, but it can kind of give you an idea of where the web in general is heading in certain areas. And I think that's really exciting. I know I'm looking forward to hearing some of the thought leadership on along those lines, I guess, too.
I think JavaScript was popular before WordPress was making it popular now, or mm-hmm. at least with the announcement last December. But you can't deny that if WordPress powers 25% of the web, if there are pushes, WordPress has pushed a couple of different standards or technologies, like the REST API is going to be, you know, I think going to be very huge.
Yeah.
In terms of that. And a lot of people probably, you know, there's a lot of people who had very little experience with APIs and that sort of thing. And then, you know, with all this WordPress API stuff, REST API stuff that was been talked about last year and is actually being executed and it's going to go forward this year, then yeah, it probably does push a lot of designer and developers buttons in terms of what technologies they need to learn, or at least it should, or at least should give them some thought.
Awesome. So I feel like, so part of participating in WordCamps is, you know, just diving into the WordPress community as a whole and getting more involved. I obviously don't want to speak for everybody, but I think, and I've kind of gotten this impression from people before, that when you feel a bit like an outsider of the WordPress inner circle, it can be a little bit intimidating to, you know, bump shoulders with people who are like making WordPress and, you know, the core and things like BuddyPress. But when I hear your story, I don't really get the impression that you had, you know, a difficult or, you know, intimidating experience diving into all of this. Is that correct? I mean, did you find it intimidating, or did you just jump in and, you know, the community opened its arms wide for you?
I was a frog in a slowly boiling pot. So I didn't realize it was subtle. And by the time, you know, one day I woke up and it was, wow. So I think that probably best explains my experience.
So David, if you could just, tell us a bit about what we can expect in WordCamp Miami and maybe what makes it different than other WordCamps around the country.
Well, first of all, you can get out of the cold weather.
That would be
crappy weather, because we moved it up in February, from May to February. So you should be able to, most of the country should be more or less still suffering the freeze. But after eight years, you know, at least being involved in the organization at some level, you know, it's easy to get worn out, or it's taken for granted that it's, you know, you're setting up the same camp and same everything. It's a local event. So a lot of people do come, and they're used to coming every year, but we always try to add something new. We always like to try new things. Like we have this thing called a how-to track instead of a users track. So it's basically like a users track, but we do a little more, try to encourage the speakers to do a little more hand-holding. And this coming up in WordCamp Miami in a few weeks, we are doing a Learn JavaScript Deeply track, so which was inspired by, of course, Matt Mullenweg's presentation. We offer various workshops of various things. And we also like to throw in like little Easter egg things or something where, you know, we've created, I think last year we put one of these cards. I'm not even sure if I'm looking at it right. There we go. So this is the WAPU, I think that's how you pronounce it. So we hid these cards in various places around the WordCamp, even in the bathrooms. Made it awkward when you try to go into the ladies' room, but other than that, it worked out pretty well. But I'm kidding. We had women go in there, but we have everything from scavenger hunts, and this year I think the kids' workshops. We actually have like more sessions planned for kids, which I think is also important, because and other WordCamps are picking on it too. But for WordCamp Miami, it's been very important to include the children or the young people in. So this year we have a kids panel. We have two speakers that are both under the age of 14.
Oh, wow.
Coming in to speak. We also have a kids workshop for the third or fourth year in a row. And we also got some crafting and STEM activities as well. So for the kids. So I think, you know, WordCamps are evolving to, you know, they've always been community events, but you know, we've never looked around in our communities per se and try to make it as inclusive and I think now people are starting to make that. So, you know, make it so that people with kids can come and people that are older people that maybe could come and maybe, you know, try to figure out what your community is and kind of test, custom tailor it for that. And that's what I think makes WordCamp Miami stand out a bit, because we're a very culturally diverse, you know, community of lots of ages, races, and other differences. So
any particular presentation or talk that you're excited for?
I'm just excited for the JavaScript, any talk in the Learn JavaScript track. I'm very excited for, because some of these people are not even in the WordPress community. Some of these people are from the, you know, like the JavaScript community, or, you know, those lines. So and that's the other thing about WordCamps too, is that, you know, we try to get other people from other kinds of communities, people that are outside the WordPress bubble, and get them involved. I think that makes it a much more interesting conference and exposes people and exposes people to a community that may not have known about them previously. So especially when we're getting into these new areas, and especially from designer point of view, I've attended designer conferences a lot, and the thing I appreciate most is, you know, you hear about somebody working at this company like, you know, MailChimp or this agency or something along those lines. And you get to learn what it's like to be part of those agencies and those companies. And you don't get those types of stories. If you go to enough WordCamps, you start to hear the same story sometimes, depending upon who you choose to listen to. So I think it's important that we keep kind of bringing people outside the WordPress bubble and have them get involved in the WordPress community on some sort of level. So,
well, awesome. I really look forward to it. And David, really appreciate you coming on Divination, sharing your story and your experience. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on. I think this is fun. We should, maybe you should check with me after the conference is over, make sure I'm still alive.
As always, I'd just like to extend one more big thank you to David for making time to come on the show. I really enjoyed hearing his story and learning a bit about what developers look for when finding design collaborators. I also really look forward to participating in the Miami WordCamp next weekend, which is February 19th through the 21st. So this will actually be the first time that Elegant Themes has sent a representative to cover a WordCamp event. And I'd like to make the most of it by keeping you all updated, maybe even meeting some of you in person, and also creating valuable content along the way. So if anyone in the Divi Nation is going to be there, please make sure to get in touch with me via Facebook, Twitter, or by emailing me directly at podcast@elegantthemes.com. I'd love to meet you, chat about how you use Divi, and maybe even do some spur-of-the-moment recording for future podcast episodes. Again, this will all be happening next weekend at the Miami WordCamp, February 19th through the 21st. If you'd like more information on the event, check out the video description on YouTube, or you can go to the blog post on elegantthemes.com/blog. It's in the community category. All right. Well, that's all for this week's episode of Divi Nation. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. See you then.